from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in this morning's forum opening hour, President Obama has urged the passage of ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which passed its first hurdle in the Senate and will soon be up for a vote. It will prohibit workplace discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender, and we'll hear from both sides. Then at 9:30, we'll talk about matters astronomical, and we'll hear all about the recently reported data from NASA's Kepler spacecraft and the extraordinary number of Earth-sized habitable planets. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. On Monday, U.S. senators on both sides of the aisle voted to move forward with a bill that would prohibit workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The Senate is expected to have a full vote on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA, later this week, though the bill faces an uncertain future in the House of Representatives. Supporters say these protections are long overdue for LGBT employees, while opponents claim that the bill will result in costly, frivolous lawsuits and threaten employers' religious freedom. We want to discuss the issues surrounding ENDA in this opening forum segment. And joining us is Maya Rupert, who is Policy Director for the National Center for Lesbians' Rights, and she is with us from Washington, D.C. this morning. Good to have you with us. Good morning.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's good to be here.
Also good to have Walter Olson. He's also with us this morning from the nation's capital, senior fellow with the Cato Institute, and he founded and runs the blog overlawyer.com and is author of a book called The Excuse Factory, a book on lawsuits in the workplace. Walter Olson, welcome to Forum.
Glad to join you. Thanks.
Glad to have you. Maya Rupert, let me begin with you. There's a certain kind of wisdom that says a lot of statutes are on the books and asks the question, why is this necessary now and why is it?
Well, it's necessary right now because while there are an awful lot of laws on the books protecting people from employment discrimination, there are no federal protections that explicitly protect people from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. There are sort of a patchwork of state and local laws that have been passed to give people protections at different levels, but ENDA would provide federal protections nationwide, and it would provide clarity for the companies that are trying to comply with the law. Right now, they have to sort of figure out what states prohibit what type of discrimination. This would clarify that and provide, some confidence and clarity for businesses who just want to comply with the law.
Well, there are a lot of major arguments in opposition, and we can talk about a number of them, but I want to focus particularly on one, and I know we'll hear from Mr. Olson about his concern about that, and that is, Ralph Reed, who for many years was associated with Christian Rights, said what this should be called the Trial Lawyers Full Employment Act. In other words, there are going to be a lot of lawsuits. John Boehner said exactly the same thing if this goes through.
We hear that a lot, but what we've actually seen, in the states and localities that have passed employment protections for LGBT people is that it doesn't create, a bunch more litigation. What it actually does is, what we see is that it's actually preventing it. This is why I think we've gotten so much support from the business community, because right now the situation people are in is, again, they're having to deal with a patchwork of laws across the country that are different depending on state, depending on county. And they're also having to deal with people making sort of arguments under different statutes, and there's just not a lot of clarity as to what constitutes actionable discrimination and what doesn't. This, we believe, and what we've actually seen play out is it will prevent companies from additional liability because they'll know what their obligations actually are.
There are 21 states, by the way, which have these protections, and about 80% of the major Forbes companies have it presently, but let me go to you, if I may, Walter Olson. And, this is an attempt to get this uniform across the land. And Ms. Rupert mentioned the fact that businesses are behind it. The argument is that maybe businesses will save money as a result of this. But your argument is quite the contrary.
Yeah, I mean, let me agree in part and disagree in part with what Maya said, because contrary to what Ralph Reed and John Boehner have said, there is not a lot of evidence that this becomes a big area of litigation in the 21 states that have passed it and the various cities. It's actually one of the least used categories as far as people's pursuing, and you can speculate about why that might be. I think there's a difference between people's willingness to set aside 2 or 3 years of their life in wrangling if it's an age discrimination or a disability discrimination claim. Those are two fast-growing areas versus sexual orientation, where people, for whatever reason, aren't that inclined to sue. I don't place much stock, I'm afraid, in the uniformity argument for a couple of reasons. First is that localities will continue to be legally free to add on additional rules, so there will still be disuniformity. It's not going to provide a federal rule to the exclusion of some state like California or some city like New York City going further. As you mentioned, the great majority of the biggest employers and a whole lot of the medium-sized employers already have policies in place, and that's why my critique, as I say, my critique is not the same as Ralph Reed's, but my critique is that there is a social revolution that is most of the way through manifesting itself, and the laws aren't making all that much difference one way or the other. The revolution will continue, and the workplace will continue to get more welcoming whether or not they pass this law.
Well, you may not be as concerned as Ralph Reed, perhaps, about infringement on religious freedom and all of that, but what about the concern about the economy? As I said, there's an argument that's been put forward that this will actually help business.
Well, I mean, let's get back to the religious freedom in a moment. But on the economy, I would put this in context of developments in a lot of other areas of so-called protected groups, because as we know, there's a form of law here. You know, you can't discriminate against people because of marital status or because of pregnancy or because of disability. And this adds another car to that train. And behind it are waiting a lot of other cars. Massachusetts is debating, should overweight be a protected class? Michigan has enacted appearance in general, you know, looksism. And other people say that being unemployed should be a protected class in itself. Now, individually, none of these are going to break the economy. Add up 10 of them, however, and you get something that's more, for want of a better word, more European.
You know, so forgive me, you're saying this would create a new subjective protective class and possibly be a slippery slope for others?
Well, it's a slippery slope, and we're all on it because we all have to decide how many of these we accept. And some consistent thinkers say, oh, yeah, let's take all of them, and what's wrong with the European system where everyone can appeal to the government if they're losing their job? You know, to me, that's where I say, whoa, stop. You know, there's reasons why our economy is more dynamic. There's reasons of freedom of association that we don't want to give up. You know, let's think about whether the general trend toward adding more and more protected groups is taking us in the right direction.
Can I ask you to respond to that, Maya Rupert, that danger of more protective classes?
Sure. I'm not entirely sure I see that as a danger. What we're talking about is restricting the basis by which people can lose their jobs or face discrimination to things that are actually relevant to employment. Sexual orientation and gender identity are not relevant to whether or not a person can do a job, and so they should not be basis for people being terminated or people facing discrimination. That's what we're talking about. And so the sort of the slippery slope that at one point, you know, there will be absolutely no subjective standards by which people can make employment discriminations, I think is really sort of a distraction from what we're talking about, and that is that these are criteria that are completely unrelated to a person's work performance.
Maya Rupert, is this going to – this may fly in the Senate. In fact, it seems to have the earmarks of it. You've got a number of GOP senators on board, but is this really going to get through the House of Representatives?
You know, the other big legislative thing I'm working on right now is immigration, and I feel like, you know, that has been counted out and counted back in so many times. I don't like to speculate. We definitely have an uphill battle in the House, but, you know, we had an uphill battle in the Senate until we didn't. So I think that that's sort of the important thing with, you know, bills like this. They're very dynamic. And, you know, as Walter pointed out, I mean, ideas about these things are changing, and they're changing quickly. And so I definitely think we have a lot of work to do in the House, but we also have a lot of friends, we have a lot of allies, we have a lot of people that see how imperative this is.
And Walter Olson, we touched on religion, and is that of concern to you? And also the other things that have been brought up, like what about behavior in the workplace? That transgender people or people who are dressed of a different gender are going to use workplace bathrooms of the other gender, that sort of thing?
Yeah. You know, the latter point raises some tough questions, and they have begun breaking out, you know, in controversies around the country. from the experience with the many state laws in this area, I will say that most of the religious accommodation battles come up in the public accommodations area more than in the employment area, so far as I can see. Every so often you'll get a harassment case or a hostile work environment case. And these, by the way, can work in both directions. You get cases from people filed saying, my coworkers have been saying, you know, mean anti-gay jokes. And you also get people saying, my coworkers are saying mean things about my religious scruples against homosexuality. And those can provide very difficult and possibly insoluble problems for employers, because workers will talk to each other, they'll talk on controversial issues, and the law has not provided a lot of clarity as to when a vigorous discussion becomes insulting in either direction. But I would say, again, going by the experience on the local laws, most of these issues are, you know, pretty solvable in principle. And we know that in part because people already have felt controversially about areas like religious discrimination and other hot topics. I think that it is worth paying attention to the conscience issues, and I'm not with the advocates who say, oh, just ignore that stuff, this is discrimination, we can't tolerate any of it. I think that part of the beauty of American history is that we make room for separate subcultures to live, and that may mean an extremely conservative one in one place and an extremely liberal one in a different one.
And just getting back to litigation potential for a moment, the Williams Institute did a study of the local ENDA laws, and there was no really great spike in litigation.
Yeah, as when I wrote about this last week, I said if you ask most personnel managers what parts of discrimination law really drive them up the wall, this will not typically be on the first five or six of the list. It will be, and there's a reason for that, which is if you look at areas like disability discrimination, age discrimination, criminal record discrimination, you find the law trying to tell employers to stop doing things that are economically rational for them to do, or vice versa. As Maya said, with sexual orientation discrimination, in general, the law is banning stuff that it's already irrational to do. It's banning stuff where you're turning away workers who actually were good at their jobs. Businesses don't mind those kinds of regulations as much.
All right. There's going to be a full vote at the end of this week, and we'd like to know where you weigh in and what your thoughts are. In fact, you can join us now. This is a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to add to the conversation or if you have a question or comment, you ought to call now. The toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, and we welcome your involvement. 866-733-6786. There are, of course, a number of other ways you can join us. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, but we do welcome your thoughts about, the advancement of the LGBT workplace discrimination bill by the United States Senate. Both sides of the aisle actually voted to move it forward. It would prohibit workplace discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And as I said, the Senate is expected to have a full vote on ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, later this week, though the bill does face uncertain future in the House of Representatives. You're certainly welcome to join the program. Again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Our guest, Maya Rupert, who is with the National Center for Lesbian Rights. She's policy director and based in Washington. And Walter Olson, who's also based in Washington, senior fellow with the Cato Institute, who founded and runs the blog overlawyer.com and is author of The Excuse Factory, which is a book on lawsuits in the workplace. And I ought to mention here that there is a lot of opposition to this because of lawsuits, as we've said, the assertion being that it would be costly in terms of frivolous lawsuits, and also concern about employers' religious freedom. But those in favor say that it is necessary and the time has come, as you heard Maya Rupert say. And let's hear what you have to say on this. We begin with a caller from New Mexico. Tom, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Wanted to weigh in on a different kind of an approach. I'm a professor of peace studies at the University of New Mexico. And we have, colleagues and I have an edited text coming out now on alternative approaches to dealing with workplace types of bullying and violence and so forth. And one of the places I've actually had an opportunity to do some pretty interesting work is the use of restorative practices as an alternative to turning to the law as a way of redressing these types of issues. So So the focus becomes one of, rather than looking at what policies were violated, or we begin to look at the harm, and look at, we turn to employees, we turn to managers, to rather than look at policy violations, to look at the harm that comes out of the situation and what needs to be done to repair that harm in the workplace.
What do you think, Walter Olson, of the restorative idea in terms of diminishing the number of lawsuits?
I think there's a lot of promise in it, and very often studies of the workplace that I see indicate that approaches, you know, they can involve mediation, they can involve sitting people down and talking through why something that someone said may have been offensive and they didn't realize it. What it does is repair the relationship, and lawyers, you know, that lawyers have many virtues, but repairing relationships are often not among them. They, things often tend to, turn into trench warfare where people, set their positions in an adversary way against each other. So, yeah, the Cato Institute published a book on sexual harassment years ago by Joan Kennedy Taylor about the legal ways in which women can do something when it comes up in the workplace. And I have learned a lot from the literature on this.
I'm going to go to more of your calls in a moment, but let me first go to you, Maya Rupert. Speaker Boehner also said, in addition to the fact that he believes this would create a number of frivolous lawsuits, it would make it possible and likely for more frivolous lawsuits, that this would be costly for jobs. And your retort to that would be what?
That is another criticism that I'm honestly not even completely sure of. I don't really know where that comes from. ENDA is very specifically, it's written so that it is going to have, it's not going to have an impact on really small businesses. This is a law that is only going to apply to businesses with 15 or more employees. And so I know, there is always sort of that, what people say is that it's going to have a, devastating impact on small businesses, and usually when they're saying that, they're not thinking about the fact that this is already tailored so that it's not going to have an impact on, very small businesses. What we're doing is talking about businesses with 15 or more employees, and we're making sure that people aren't facing discrimination. That I honestly cannot see how you get to the end of that sentence and say that it's going to have a bad impact on jobs for anyone.
But Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul want to tack on a right to work law to this, an amendment for the national right to work law, which is extant in 24 states, that would forbid contracts between companies and labor unions and require workers to pay the unions for bargaining on their behalf. I'm certain this. Yeah, go ahead.
It wouldn't be the strangest political compromise that had ever been made. I mean, it seems to come out of both out of left field or right field, as the case may be. But I think the political intuition behind it is okay. Here's a pretty popular idea from one side, and here's a pretty popular idea from another side. Does anyone support both of them? Maybe enough people support both of them that both sides could feel they got a victory.
Well,
I'm just guessing.
I think that's a pretty good guess. That's a good educated guess. But Maya Rupert, is this more about rights for LGBT workers? Is it more really about the workplace and labor?
This is definitely an issue about the workforce. I mean, this is obviously that, it's having an impact on LGBT workers, but it strengthens the entire workforce when people aren't being, are being exposed to workplace discrimination. It strengthens everyone. And so this is definitely about more than just rights for LGBT people. It's about basic fundamental fairness. I think that, I definitely heard about the amendment, we're talking about, and I think, it's unfair to credit ENDA for losing jobs if what we're really talking about is attaching what is really an unrelated amendment to the law. That, to me, doesn't sound like ENDA will cause jobs. That, to me, sounds like, political gamesmanship can cause jobs, and I'm fairly confident that the votes just aren't there to attach an amendment like that.
Let me bring another caller on here, and that's you, Dottie. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, and thanks so much for being there. It was really an odd thing. My brother's been going through a situation at work, and all of a sudden I'm listening, and it's like right on as far as my brother reached out to the EEOC for a discrimination issue at work, and he needed some assistance. He has dyslexia, and he felt that he needed some tools to help him communicate with some situations that he had at work. As soon as he filed an EEOC claim, which the government was there to assist him with, it immediately became a threat. And, you know, we're talking about hot topics with religious affiliation and sexual orientation, but dyslexia, something minor that, you know, not minor, I don't want to do that, but label it as that because it's not. Obviously, it's caused a conflict in his work. But now he's being, after 22 years of good service with the North Tahoe Public Utilities District, he's now being asked for a severance package to put together because he's considered a threat and a liability. As business is probably, just like you said, it's cost-effective for them to eliminate him if he's going to be someone that questions what's going on there. But the retaliation factor is huge. And then where do you go from there? It takes so long to get through the process that he stands to, you know, lose his home or have, you know, financial considerations trying to get through the process. And the whole thing was to ask for help,
I think we get the picture. It's a labyrinthine and formidable process, obviously, that your brother's been through, and I wish him good luck. But, Walter Allison, this could be indicative of what we're talking about here in a deeper way, couldn't it?
Yeah, the processes are hard to use. Getting into a lawsuit, we know, is one of the most unpleasant things that happen to people. But even getting into one of these administrative processes is just miserable for most people. And that's why, you know, several of the things we've talked about are there ways to approach the same values and goals that can let people steer clear of these processes and repair the relationship fast, if that's possible.
Maya Rupert, go to you on this.
I definitely think that efforts to repair relationships are good companion pieces to things like ENDA or, in the case we're talking about here, the ADA. But there has to be an underlying a statute that allows people to, when they are facing adverse employment actions, to keep their jobs. I mean, it cannot be as simple as let's help people to repair a relationship and stay where they are, because that's sometimes not an option. And it also cannot be as simple as let's help people repair the relationship and then just move on because they don't want to go through it. I mean, I think that is oversimplifying what people are really dealing with when we're talking about adverse employment actions. People are losing jobs and not finding other things. The LGBT community has faced such rampant employment discrimination, and that's particularly true for the transgender community. It's a devastating problem that needs more than just, you know, here's the best way to repair a relationship with an employer.
And apropos of your remarks, Maya Rupert, here's a tweet from Elizabeth who writes, employment discrimination against the LGBT community is real. Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center hears about these cases all of the time. Well, we'll have to follow this, and I was hoping maybe to squeeze in another caller, but I think we're coming up on it here. And let me just extend thanks to our two guests who joined us for this half-hour segment, Maya Rupert, again, who's Policy Director of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, and Walter Olson, who's Senior Fellow with the Cato Institute. Thank you both for being with us on Forum. Appreciate your time. And we are going into another segment, as I said, and we're going to talk about matters astronomical in the segment up ahead. A lot of news, of course, about India launching to Mars, but also a study that came out just on Monday of this week in the Proceedings of National Academy of Science about habitable planets and planets that are Earth-like size and planets that can sustain life as perhaps we know it. All that up ahead. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.